So we're back again. Faith, hope, and charity. Charity, scriptural charity, is translated love. So faith, hope, and love. And we read in scripture, we read all over the place that we can do all kinds of things, but if we leave the love part out, they're useless.
Yes.
So you had a thought, and you wrote something down, so I'm going to let you go with that, whatever it was. It seemed as though you wanted to or needed to express that. What was it?
Well, I just wrote down, love is the answer, what's the question? I found this binder one time, and this was years ago. I mean, as I look back over my life, I can see my journey. My journey is a journey of love. Mm-hmm. It's been a journey of love because I loved initially, I loved conditionally, right? That was my love when I was younger. Mm-hmm. It was based on condition. And the love you're talking about there, that you just mentioned, is mm-hmm. unconditional love, right? And that when I looked back over my life, all these little signs that were sent me during that time pointed me in this direction, right, of unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And that came from a little binder. It was a binder. I was doing a course at university, and I found this binder, and it said that. And it was a funny little, peculiar-looking icon at the bottom there. And it said, love is the answer. What's the question, right?
Yeah,
and
good.
Many things during my life have come to me
mm-hmm.
in similar fashions of that, right? I can remember it was a spiritual experience mm-hmm. where I actually felt love coming from my eyes. It was a most bizarre thing when I looked at it happened on two different occasions at two different people, right?
Okay.
So, you know, I've had little signs like that all the way along. And I look back and I think, yeah, this has been my journey. To mm-hmm. become really that unconditional love. It's still a journey.
it's still a journey.
Right? Because I found that it actually is about undoing all the ways I was conditioned in as a child and all the thinking processes that I was conditioned in as a child. So it's almost been an undoing
mm-hmm.
of everything from the beginning, right? My views and my opinions and, you know, my thoughts and everything, right? You know, because what do I know? I don't know anything. I used to think I knew everything, right?
No.
I know nothing, right? And actually, it's a much more simpler life and an unrestricted life in many ways. I'm not burdened with anything.
Yeah.
Because to me, anything is possible today. I don't know. I don't know, right?
As long as you don't try and do it alone.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we're given people as well as, you know, a God.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
With that, there's nothing we can't do.
No.
Yet on our own, there's nothing we can do.
No, exactly.
So I think that's the purpose of the whole step. But I think what you described there was, what it said to me anyway, was, you know, we can say, oh, we love this, we love that, we love all people, we love God, and so on, but that's not the experience of love. You know, mm-hmm. to experience love is the unconditionality that you spoke about. But I think it's experiencing love versus making that decision to love, okay?
Yes.
So, and that, folks, has nothing to do with in love. We're talking about the love, the charity. The Bible talks about doing the next right thing every time you can, you know, and not that prayer has much of a place right on the show here, but, you know, if I pray or ask or seek for the next right thing to do all the time, I don't need any other prayers. You know, that's all I have to be doing is seeking the next right thing that I should be doing. And to me, that's powerful. I don't need all the other things. And you know, if I combine that with you know, with the will of the Almighty, whatever that means to me, I think I've got it beat. And like you said, it sure takes a load off. I don't have to worry about, you know, how does he think or she think? Am I doing the right thing for that one? Well, that one doesn't like it, that one will. Or, you know what I mean? Like, am I a people pleaser or do I exist because I was, you know, created and put here to do whatever, you know? And Jay, I see you nodding there. Your experience of love, and you've had a multifaceted life. And by the way, Jay, our production fellow here, is going to come on and tell his story. And I don't remember the date offhand, but...
Yeah, I think it's the second or third week in February, I believe, yeah.
Okay, that means, folks, you better listen to both of those, because in case you miss one. But yeah, Jay's going to tell his story. And because he's had quite a story, lived quite a life, I would expect, a bad word to use, but that he has experienced love. And I'll tell you one of the reasons, and he can verify it or not, you know, we're a real-time, unrehearsed, real show. If people agree or don't agree, we want to hear that too. But your sister gave you a kidney.
She sure did, yeah.
Made a big difference in your life. Now, that is about as close to the epitome of a love decision, if you will, you know, to give of yourself in such a huge way, you know.
Definitely,
and
yeah.
And that may even happen again for you, as we know, as your story progresses. But tell me, am I on the right track there? I mean, that's got to be.
I think out of, you know, all the gifts that I've ever received in my life, you know, what my sister did for me, like that's a big surgery to go through, to give up a part of your own body to go through. Yeah. Like my sister's never been through a major surgery before. So this is it's a true example of love to say that, you know, I don't want to see my brother, you know, on kidney dialysis anymore. I was, you know, only 20, my early 20s at the time. So my sister said, you know, I love my brother so much that I'm willing to give up a part of my body to help him.
Yeah. That's great. And then, see, that's the kind of thing to me, that's the experience of love.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, and she lay down, you know, I mean, let's face it, folks, you go into major surgery, you can die, yeah. You know? And, you know, when you make that decision, well, hey, come, you know, H or high water, we're going through with this, and, you know, I love my brother enough to do that. I don't know, that's the epitome. I think that's what people talk about, lay down your life, and you do, you know.
You sure do, you know, definitely, yeah.
Every time you go under that good old, you know, anesthesia.
Yeah, you're you know, in you know, God's hands.
Feels
you're
that's
you're
right.
In the hands of the doctor. And,
that's right.
You know, you just hope that, you know, that everything's going to work out fine, and it has. Yeah. And, you know, 19 years later, like I'll tell more about my story a little bit later. But we just celebrated 19 years on Friday, on the 18th.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
What's your sister's name?
Rochelle.
Rochelle. Yeah. And Rochelle, if you ever pick up a copy of this or listen to this, thank you for keeping our production man going here for 19 years, and I'm sure many, many more years. So. We were speaking of how your sacrifice to do that was kind of the epitome of giving and loving of your brother. So, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
I read something this morning, and it's I thought, how true. It said, we've become so obsessed with what we believe instead of focusing on how we live. And I thought, wow, that's a good one.
Yeah.
On our belief system seems to be so important, but like, how are you living your life, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know how they say in the recovery programs, the best amends that you can make is really the evidence of who you are, how you live your life, just like you said. So, and I'll tell you a quick story about my young fellow Sean there when he was around. You know, for the longest time, I had to go through a cancer stint there way back, and with melanoma, and it metastasized and so on, and I had to go for all kinds of treatments. And during those treatments, it was not fun, to say the least. I was down a lot of weight and skinny and sick all the time. And anyway, poor Sean, with the monkey on his back and the addictions, he'd be stuck in some little nook or cranny downtown, you know, shirtless or lonely or hungry or frightened or whatever, and dad would get up and go down. And when you're sick like that, folks, on chemical therapy of any sort, and you go down and do these things, you just do them because of love, but they don't feel good, okay? So later on, I did this kind of thing so many times, I had to ask my son, you know, and we talk about making amends in the... What's how we spend the ninth month of the year and making amends wherever we can if we're not going to hurt people. So I had to ask him how come, in a sense, that he had never thought it necessary to make amends over never thanking me for all of these things, you know. And I just had to approach the subject. You know, we're not supposed to ask for amends, but I had to for me. I had to for my sanity. And I did one day, and when he had over a year's sobriety, which was monumental for him, and I said, Sean, you know, all of that, when all of that was going on, you know, and you must have known, I mean, even though you were in your disease and so on, you must have known how much of a job it was for me to get up sick and go down into the middle of the city and do these things and so on, and stand up in courtrooms and all that. And he said, yeah, I did, Dad. And he said, I went to my sponsor. By the way, his sponsor was a fellow about my age. And he talked to him about it. And his sponsor told him, he said, well, Sean, you know, you've probably lied 1,000 times to your dad and your mom and everybody else. And you know, how many times have you said you're going to quit this and stop that and do this and do that? And of course, they agreed. And he said, the best amend, I believe, you can make to your dad is to be a good son, and just be a good son, you know. And that, folks, is what proved out to me, because he did. He was the best son he could be, and so on, you know, on and off. But he was. He was the best son he could be in view of the circumstances he had to live. So that story told me that the evidence is really in how you live, just like Sue just described. So... again, that is the way to make your amends, you know, to God, to your fellow man, and to everyone else, is just to live properly, make good decisions, ask for help, ask for godly help, ask for people help. We weren't put here to be alone, so, you know, whether that means hitched up, married, single, whatever, there's a lot of people out there, and whether you're naturally an extrovert or an introvert, you still need to find a way to connect with people. It's really important, because I don't think you can do it alone. I don't think God made us to do it alone. And I think he corrects us if we try and do it alone. I know I've had lots of corrections over my life, and because I was innately a loner. But any comments along those lines, Sue? Because you're the other way. You're much more of an extrovert than I am.
yes, but... I can't do it alone either, because I think it's a whole transformation from within, really. It's about looking at things in a totally different way mm-hmm. to the way I was originally brought up. That's why it's so much work, mm-hmm. right? Because it's amazing how deep that conditioning went as a child. It's in there, and you go along in life, and that carried me through the first 40 years of my life. Mm-hmm. The conditioning did. The way I was brought up was the way I led my life then, right? So if I want to undo it all, it's at least the next 40 years,
yeah,
right?
That's right, yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of work of doing things the opposite way many times that mm-hmm. I would have done in my earlier days, right? Because of that old saying, love conquers all, right? Which means that you don't ever actually get angry. If you love unconditionally, you don't get angry. You're not jealous.
Yeah.
You just
right.
flow
yeah.
along with life.
Yeah.
You live life on life's terms.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like you almost become a robot in many ways, but it is and it isn't like that, because you have that amazing sense of peace, you know, you can get mm-hmm. on, and sometimes I have it, sometimes I don't have it. That's what I'm saying. It's an ongoing journey to reverse everything, right? The way of yeah. thinking and looking. But I believe that love does conquer all. I mean, I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen it. If my approach is one of love instead of taking the bait of the angry person, right? It's amazing. I can disarm someone that way, you know, but my natural way would be, you know, to fight right back, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it's a lot of work to change it all. Yeah. And but I've had little, you know, I've had these inklings of how wonderful it is when I can, when I can do it that way. Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's so beautiful and it ends so beautifully, and you think, wow, yeah. You know, love worked right there.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Love works, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
What do you think about trust fitting into that? Because you said something kind of important there. Jealousy is really, you know, I don't trust the person.
Yes.
I mean, that's really what it is. It's not, you know, that person is bad or good or anything else. I don't trust that person. So, you know, am I with the wrong person, or is it just me? You know, do I have that nature? Do I not trust anybody? Hmm. Because really, if I trust somebody, I don't have to worry what they're doing when I'm not there or any of those kinds of things. So,
right. So
that jealous sickness, if you will, I think it comes from trust or lack of trust. And real trust for me anyway, as a, you know, the Christian man, is trusting God. If I trust God, I'm with the right people. And if they do things or whatever, that's part of the path. And whatever piece of that I have to take into part of my life, that's just the way it is. So, again, you know, with acceptance and, you know, we drop fear when we draw same at the same time. If we drop jealousies and those kinds of things, we don't fear, you know.
Yes, you exactly. Know, so. Exactly. It's a learning thing again, though, isn't it, really?
Oh,
but
yeah,
like you
absolutely.
Said, it does come with the love, I think.
Yeah.
The trust comes with the love somehow, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not so important, like, if the person does something to you or not. In the end,
that's right.
once you become unconditional love, which I'm still looking forward to, will I ever, you know, it's not so important, like, what the person does. That's their problem, really.
Yeah.
Right? We're still called to love them unconditionally. Unconditionally is unconditionally. It doesn't
That's
really
right.
matter what,
yeah.
does it?
No. And it doesn't matter what happens. Yeah. You're right. I mean, that's another we see in Scripture. I forget where it is, but where the fellow's wife, you know, was a prostitute and goes back into prostitution after they're married. And, you know, and he's kind of sickened, but he senses that as God tells him, no, you've got to take her back anyway and love her and so on. And he does. And, I mean, same sort of thing. Like, love trumps all, too, because, you know, he didn't stop loving the woman. He just didn't want to share her, you know what I mean? And, and again, like, that's just flesh anyway. Big deal.
Yeah.
I think we need a song.
Yeah, I think it is time for a song. And speaking of the show theme, I think I definitely feel love is the theme of the show. So here's a song from Huey Lewis and the News, Power of Love, and we'll be back here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.
The ball, man.